The ARZ Files, the ultimate Cardinals podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us from 98.7 FM and ArizonaSports.com is the Adam Green on Twitter. Guess what his name is, and he is Adam Green. We'll talk a little bit today about the Cardinals. And Adam, this is not the start that Arizona wanted or expected. They end up dropping a game to the Rams after dropping the game to the Bills. The only win they have this season, amazingly, is over a 1-3 Buccaneers team. What looks to be wrong with the Cardinals, who appear to have really most of the pieces in place that you'd expect that they need?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because you said it's not a start that they would have wanted. And of course, no one would want to start out 1-3. Everybody wants to be 4-0, 3-1. But it's the second part that no one expected. And you look at the Cardinals from last season, they won 13 games. They reached the NFC Championship game. Yes, they got beat up pretty good by Carolina, but Arizona brought pretty much everyone back, and much was made over the offseason about every player on offense who caught a touchdown, scored a caught a touchdown, ran for a touchdown, gained a yard, had a carry, had a catch. They were all back, and the only changes they had were on the offensive line, and the thought was they may have improved there. So you do that, then you had Chandler Jones to the defense, and you think, well, this team, they may not win 13 games again, but there's not going to be any worse than they were. And to start off 1-3 with the loss, they've had three of their four games have been at home. It was to Jimmy Garoppolo, Patriots. It was to Tyrod Taylor and the Bills. Now Case Keenum and the Rams at home. You kind of wonder what is wrong with this team. And you look at their offense has not been as good as it was last season. And their defense has made just enough mistakes in these games to lose. And it's like the Cardinals are getting blown out in any single game. But that's not the kind of measuring stick you have for a team with Super Bowl aspirations. It's not about keeping it close. It's about winning football games. And right now, they're just not doing that.
Well, now we're dealing with Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol, and they have a game on Thursday against San Francisco. What's the concern level with Palmer?
Yesterday, it was very high. The thought was that there'd basically no chance he'd be cleared for Thursday. And Bruce Arians, and today he was speaking to the media, and he told us that he spoke with Carson last night, and Carson said he was doing fine, and he was feeling pretty good, and that he was in the concussion protocol still, and that he was going to go through some of the physical activity today. And Bruce Arians made it sound like there's a chance Carson Palmer could be ready to go for Thursday. And, of course, it all depends on how bad the concussion is, how quickly the symptoms subside and dissipate. And there's really no way to know. Carson Palmer could have made great progress between last night and today, and they might hit a wall. You just don't know that. But Bruce Arians made it seem like today that even if Carson Palmer doesn't practice tomorrow and he doesn't practice on Wednesday, that if he is able to go Thursday, then he will be the quarterback. So there's a level of concern that, yeah, he's going to the concussion protocol, and until he's cleared to practice and then play, he's still not going to be an option. But there's a little bit more optimism today than there was yesterday with regards to his chances to be ready to go for Thursday.
It's sort of strange to say, but looking at the season that Palmer's had thus far, while he's still very effective, where I am, I'm out in Denver, and we watched Peyton Manning start to slip a little bit and then fell off a cliff. Palmer to me looks like someone who's maybe showing the signs at 36, where maybe he's starting to slip just a bit, not quite as sharp. Is there something that when he plays, whether it's Thursday or not, that Bruce Arians and the Cardinal staff can do to maybe make things a little easier on him? Or am I reading something too much into it and Palmer looks like the same guy to you?
Well, that depends. And comparing to Peyton Manning, we know Manning's arm just kind of went away. He wasn't able to get the ball down the field with. I know he was never big on a lot of zip on the ball, but he really struggled to get even what minimal velocity he had. And Carson Palmer, his arm strength appears to be there. He was displaying it all throughout training camp, throwing bombs down the field. And I guess the interception, he's had a couple where he's throwing the balls just a little short. And the question is, well, is that an arm strength thing? Why is he getting the ball out far enough? Maybe it's just a bad throw. It's hard to say if he's losing it there, but he is 36 years old. And he is a player who's coming off a career year. For the Cardinals, I don't know what they do to try to make things easier for them, because their offense is largely predicated on getting that deep ball. Now, it's not the only thing they do, but Bruce Arians always talks about how in every single passing play, there is a deep route, a middle route, and a short one for them. And Palmer isn't always going for the deep one, but the problem is they haven't connected on the ones they've had, and they've got a couple of turnovers, too, because of it. So I don't know if his arm's falling apart. I don't know if he's kind of falling off that cliff as a veteran quarterback. You know it's going to happen sooner or later. Father Time catches up to everybody. But I haven't seen anything that would make me think Carson Palmer is losing it physically like that, unless you think maybe being a half yard short on a throw is a sign that his arm is slipping. Other than that, it might just be He's had a couple of rough games, not looking like quite the same player, as he and his receivers aren't quite in sync like they were last season. And, you know, all it takes is one game that he plays well. He throws for 350 yards and a few touchdowns with no interceptions, and Carson Palmer's back. So he's had a couple of games that weren't very good before that. Weeks one and two, he was pretty solid. I wouldn't read a ton into it just yet, but of course, until he starts playing really well again, those questions will remain.
Drew Stanton came in relief, 4 for 11, 37 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks. Really a disastrous outing for Stanton, who looked so good in the preseason in a game that otherwise you would think the Cardinals had an excellent chance of winning. Can they run that same offense that you're discussing through Drew Stanton?
You ask them, and they'll say, yeah. Bruce Arians said today that they wouldn't change the offense really at all if Drew Stanton was the quarterback, because he says they do similar things. And in 2014, we can remember Drew Stanton did appear in 9 games, went 5-3 as a starter for the Cardinals after Carson Palmer had a nerve injury that cost him, I think it was 3 or 4 games, and then later in the season when he tore his ACL, incidentally, against the Rams in a home game too, that Stanton came in with the Cardinals trailing and led them to a victory in that one. So there's some level of confidence that he can get the job done, but at the same time, Drew Stanton is a 32-year-old quarterback who's never been a full-time starter anywhere because he's not seen in that light. So for as not great as Carson Palmer has been this season, he's clearly the Cardinals' best option under center. But if they have to go to Stanton at least for one game in San Francisco against a team that's not exactly one of the NFL's best, then the Cardinals believe that they can get the job done. But I guess we'll have to see if they even need Stanton Thursday, because if Palmer keeps progressing like the way they're thinking he is, then they may not be needed.
Is there a sentiment out in Arizona that maybe David Johnson should be getting the ball more? I mean, he touched the ball 21 times in this game and got 124 yards out of it. I mean, he's been very effective both out of the backfield as a receiver, and we know what he's capable of on the ground. Is there something to the idea that maybe the Cardinals would be benefited by getting him the ball a little more, even though it does move them away from that quick stripe deep offense that Bruce Arians likes to run?
Well, you talk to fans, especially when the passing game isn't clicking, of course. There's this thought, why isn't David Johnson carrying the ball more? And for the Cardinals, he's their bell cow. They want to ride him, but you want to take it easy. We have Chris Johnson, who left with a groin injury yesterday, but you have someone else who you want to get the ball to, as he'll get his touches. But David Johnson right now is their best player, at least offensively, the most consistent. Of course, he had a fumble yesterday's game in the fourth quarter. The Cardinals are at 13-10 lead. We're at midfield with basically a chance to probably put the game away, and he fumbles the ball away, and the Rams go. They didn't score on the next drive, but it set up the punt, which led to the touchdown and all that stuff. So for as great as David Johnson has been this season, he's also had his problems too, especially as a route runner. He's made a few mistakes where he's gone the wrong way or didn't run the right route, and the Cardinals either got balls intercepted or had passes that should have been picked off, and then he had the turnover yesterday. So David Johnson's one of those players who he's going to get the ball a lot. Even in a game like that you mentioned yesterday, he had 21 touches. That's not exactly a small number, but when you have someone of David Johnson's caliber who's running the way he is and is as good a receiver as he is, you feel like maybe a few more touches. But, you know, what's the right number for him? Is it 25 to 30? Because a lot of that is dictated by game flow, too, where the Cardinals are in the game. And yesterday against the Rams was a slugfest with not a ton of offense.
Is there any sense, and obviously Bruce Arians himself said that they're not going to panic, but in a certain sense, too, you're also now not only behind the Seahawks by 2 games that maybe everyone expected to be there, but the Rams as well. And now the Rams have a 3-1 start, and now the hole becomes a little tougher to climb out of. Arizona has to right this ship, no matter, obviously you're going to feel confident, but they've got to get this right in the next couple of weeks pretty quickly, don't they?
Yeah, and it's the same message that's been sort of the last couple of weeks. You got to turn around and start playing like the way they think they're capable of. And to a man in that locker room, there was a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, but a lot of confidence, too, that there's enough talent on the roster to win football games. And, you know, last year, the Seahawks started off 2-4, and they reeled off a good streak, and by the time they got to the playoffs, no one wanted to play them. And that's not to say the Cardinals can do that, because until they start playing well, it's hard to come out and declare that they can, because, yeah, what they did last year was great, but last year was last year, and maybe something's different about this year's team where it's just not clicking like it did. So panic isn't the right word, but when you're 1-3, it's not a place you want to be. And yeah, you're 2 games back of the Rams, you're 2 games back of the Seahawks. And the funny thing is, or you're not funny, but the thing is, this was supposed to be the easy part of the schedule, where you had three of your first 4 games at home. The road game was against the Bills. You know, you had the Rams, you had the Bucks, you had the Tom Brady-less Patriots. You were supposed to be at worst 3-1 in the stretch, and possibly even 4-0. So when later in the season you have to go to Minnesota, you have to go to Atlanta and play teams like that, you have 2 games against Seattle still at L.A., it is not an easy schedule the rest of the way, but if the Cardinals do turn around and play like the team that most people expect them to be, either one of the best in the NFC, if not the best team in the NFL, then you have to believe that they're very capable of turning things around and getting things going. But until they do that, until they show that they can play a good 60 minutes against anybody, whether it's the Niners or the Rams or any team out there, then you're going to wonder if they can.
Well, whether it's Drew Stanton or Carson Palmer, they will have an opportunity to find out if they can get themselves back on the winning track on Thursday. In the meantime, make sure you catch Adam at 98.7 FM in Arizona at arizonasports.com and at the Adam Green on Twitter. Adam, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back on the other side with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, it's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is. And most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it, and if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night. We watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, it's spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out at you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now we're only four games in. But have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about the Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia is for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back that they lead the league in third down conversions and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they could do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mix things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. when you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1, Denver at 4-0. Which of these are contenders, and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian obviously has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me, you know, this could be a truly dominant team, but here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple of weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having nine interceptions in the last two games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beatdown by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call, or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons, are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panthers team, and to win where they did with Matt Ryan having a record year. He's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had, 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right. It's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember, now they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. And that's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that. But they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. What do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. The tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back. Tough combination. Obviously, a good team for New England to open with on the road, kind of, get the, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his feet underneath him. And so that when they come back, we'll see exactly after, because, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it. Most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh. And then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills who they just lost to. So they're going to be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. On the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals, but something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dynamic. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that means some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid, but not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggested that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds. But my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff, I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life? or are we in here to win football games? Well, you know, I think most teams would say maybe one, two, or three strikes. Okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point. I don't know if they are going to, you know, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
Coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other, because a lot of it is so silly. I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian, Walt Satulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers. And I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, you know, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. You know, let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, you know, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones. His 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was, Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. you don't make a replacement at a position on the field if you, I mean, unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.